Debbie, this Tuesday after supper, the 5th of December, 72. Rick's in town with a meeting and take my place. And all just Debbie. On charts. Debbie, the after supper, this Tuesday, the 5th of December, 72. Channel 1. This is old John Davenport.
The dogs were around that, but I was going to get out and browse.
I just can't believe anything.
I don't have any idea how long it's been.
Well, no, we won't even.
Kent had a big party for me last night when we were reminiscing about how long it had been since anybody had seen anybody else.
You know? Oh, you just came from.
I have been 2 days in Knoxville, yeah. Kind of had everybody in last night that was anywhere around when I was.
Oh, really?
There aren't very many left, so.
They're scattered everywhere.
Well, a good many of them are gone.
Yeah.
So, Fanny made me promise that I'd stop if I.
Isn't this nice?
So she was at the party.
Very lively, yes. Looking great. And L.F. is terribly thin. I didn't know whether he was well or not. He didn't say anything, but he looked much thinner. I was there 3 years ago, too, and my move was there. Fanny was ailing that night, so I brought my move instead. I saw her.
Oh, don't tell me.
Didn't see Fanny.
Don't tell me.
Well, Mamu was the one to see.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, Kenneth tells me Fanny's just into everything. She's as busy as a little beaver with all kinds of plans and projects and so forth. So she filled me in with all the things that you've been doing, and how and why. And
some of them that you won't be, wouldn't, shouldn't believe.
Well, I believe everything I'm told now that I'm retired. I have to.
Oh, my, yes.
Well, gee whiz, John, that must have been nice just to visit around with some of them up there.
Well, it was a little bit distressing in a way. Art Mosier came in to... he's retired, and said he'd like to talk to me, so he came in, and he's terribly worn. Kenneth said, you'll be shocked when you see him. He slopes. You remember him? He was in the head of the classics department.
Yes.
Well, he's been very ill, and he looks it. And most of the people that I saw 3 years ago, just by chance, Kenneth said, you may see them over in the Hermitage Room where we ate, but there wasn't anybody there that I recognized this year. So. Time marches on.
Art Mosier, you know, I haven't seen him in so long, but he was a right vigorous fellow.
Well, he's with his third wife now. He married a Scotch girl, he told me. I forgot what his second wife's name was. Evelyn. Died 4 years ago, I think he said.
Yeah.
And he just got tired of batching it, so he married again. And I don't know whether you knew Merritt Moore. Had he come before you left? He was head of the philosophy department at Knox. I knew him well there, and then he came to Tennessee to head the department there. Well, he retired this year, too. And I called him, and he said, you know, I've married a third time. And I had heard rumors of that. And two wives, one after the other, had died of cancer. So I thought he'd try once more and see whether he'd get better luck for this time. So both of them were retired with their third wives, which would suggest they were still being hale and hearty anyway to launch into matrimony at the ages they were.
Well, goodness.
John, I'm just sitting here just looking at you. You know, I just can't believe that you just dropped in like this.
Well, I did consider stopping down the way here and telephoning, only Fanny hadn't given me your telephone number, and I wasn't just sure whether there was any exchange that I could locate for the telephone girl, you know, so that she could give me a number. So I thought I'll just miss 55.
Isn't that great?
That is.
Come on in, Debbie. Debbie, this is a very dear friend of ours, John Danforth. This is Debbie Bauer.
How do you do?
Pull a chair up here. Tell you what.
I can't stay. No, I have a...
John!
You
can't have dinner with us?
No, I have a confirmed reservation in Holiday Inn, Ocala South, and I've got to shower and eat and make long-distance telephone calls before my rendezvous with my friend at Ocala Community at 8 o'clock tonight.
Well, let me tell you, on your way back, just stop and spend a week or two.
John, this breaks my heart. I've got chicken in the oven, and it won't take but just a little while.
Well, I think I've got to go. I had this confirmed reservation. So
you going to see Roscoe?
Oh, yes. I saw them last year. I was down in Florida about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And my sister's on Sanibel Island.
Yeah.
So I stopped, and I had been staying with some friends in Naples, and I said, now, I want to take these friends in Fort Myers Beach out for lunch, but I want to time it so that I don't get there so far ahead that they can prepare lunch, and I don't want to get there so late that they've already started it, so they'll say, oh, no, we can't go out, because I was sure that they don't go out very much, and I thought they ought to. But there was no objection at all. We went out to lunch, and then I made a date with them for a few days later to go out to dinner, and brought my sister and brother, which was a mistake, because I made the appointment with the Parkers without consulting my sister and brother-in-law, but I hadn't been over there yet.
Mm-hmm.
And they never said that this was their big day for the Audubon Club. They're both birders.
Oh, really?
So this year, I'm going to wait until I get over the island and telephone back to the Parkers and say, now what's the good day for dinner?
Yeah.
Kitty is not at all well, I understand.
I know she isn't.
Know.
She's having trouble with her eyes.
Yeah, so I understand. Well, she was not active, except verbally last year. My brother-in-law had not met them before. My sister had. And Charles is not very talkative anyway. And these are two sisters. Kitty is 86, Kenneth said.
I
didn't know that she was
older.
And
Emma's 140.
Emma was just my father's age. We compared notes last year. I think she was either 2 weeks older or 2 weeks younger than father. He died in February, and he'd been senile for 23 years. She's just as crickety as ever. 86 and 93, and the conversation just goes like this. And when we got back out in the car, Charles said, my, that was quite a show, just like going to the theater. Which is about the way you could describe it.
Yeah.
They don't wait for one another to finish at all. One of them just goes on top of the other one this way, and poor Roscoe Georgia comes in this way everyone.
I think the most fierce I ever saw Catherine Parker was that she, you know, those little dinners she had.
Mm-hmm.
It always was so special when you got included on those little dinners. And Guy and I were included. We were in the family. That was, we were made. Well, anyway, the Wolf Miller came to one of those little dinners, and he sat behind the paper the whole time and read. And Catherine just walked slower. Anytime I have a little dinner and somebody doesn't do his part of the conversation, they'll never get asked again. What does he think he's supposed to do? Just eat my food?
That's right. That has tricked me many a time when I was sitting there and just taking it all in, you know. I figured, well, I've got to say something too.
Stimulus from the past.
Yeah.
But John, catch us up on what you're about, what you're up to, where you're living.
Well, I'm planning 3 months in Florida, and I looked all over last year. I have friends in Naples and friends in Pompano Beach and my sister on Sanibel, and everybody says, of course, this is the ideal spot. But
Gainesville is the best place.
Well,
we got
the Kirklands told me 3 years ago when I was there, don't stay here, go farther south. My friend in Orlando says the same thing, don't stay in this area, go farther south if you really want sunshine. So I'm planning on Coral Gables. I've got to use the library there this winter. I'm writing another coin book, and I'm trying to write another play, so that I've got to have some of this historical, so I've got to have the use of the library. So that's the prospect. I'm just going to shop around
We would really show you the countryside if you'd stay here. You don't want to go to a city like Carl Gables. Who wants to go to
I'm a city boy. That's my background in bringing up. I'd be very unhappy out of the university community, I'm sure.
Well, we're in the university
community. My sister thinks that Sanibel is an ideal. I thought, what would I do here?
Well,
in Naples.
Yeah. Well, you know, I wondered about Roscoe a lot of times.
Yeah.
Well, of course, he fished all the time for a while, every morning, I think. But Kitty said last year he wasn't doing it anymore. Well, he said the fish isn't any good this year. No use going out. He's a very gruff boy.
Well, you see, he's been there outside of the center all this time.
Yeah.
And I couldn't manage it.
Well. We had, I'm going to see a colleague in St. Petersburg who retired to Lake Alfred, which is somewhere down in the middle of things. It's near Winter Haven, 9 or 10 miles, something of this sort. And he didn't drive a car. Lucille drove, his wife. But he had been used to talking to people always. He taught school for 45 years, I think, something of this sort. He was an omnivorous reader. Well, the nearest library was in Winter Haven, and every time he wanted a book, Lucille had to drive him in to take the books back and get some more. And I guess it got to be something of a chore because he went through them rather rapidly, and I'm not sure whether she was always agreeable about. But he was just miserable there because he didn't have anybody to talk to, and this once a week journey into the library was just not enough to keep him going. So he's in this Presbyterian home in St. Petersburg now, which is right downtown, and he can get around to the library. And
is that a pretty good idea?
He was most amusing last year. He told me 3 years ago when I was there, I took them out to dinner too, that they were quite happy there because there was more going on. So I said to him last year, "You still was happy here?" He said, "Well, you know, John, there are 150 people here in the home. 130 women, and of the rest, about 15 or 18 of them are really old maids, too." So I took it, he hadn't found any very congenial companionship in the men.
Well, he just listened to me.
No, I'm not sure he'd be very enthusiastic about that either. So I'm quite concerned about not getting myself. This is a strange thing that people do, though. They will, these cousins I hope to take out to lunch, Thursday, are in Spring Hill. Do you know that at all? It's near Wickiwatchee. It's one of these completely new communities with just nothing there but houses. And I think they bought the lot through a radio. It's a lovely place, actually. But there's absolutely nothing there. There are lots of homes now. The first time I was there, wasn't very much, but it's built up. But there still is nothing there. They have to go 12, 15 miles to shop and do anything that they want to. Why anybody would let himself get isolated that way when they had been, again, both school teachers and used to community life and activities of one sort or another? I don't know. This is the way life goes. So I'm going to start off in Carl Gables and see how it works. Don't
well,
look
that'll be nice.
Well, I disapprove, John Davenport. We're right close to the. We even have a place, house in town. We'll
yeah,
let you stay in there.
And townhouse and a country house, boy. That's a.
Yeah.
A palatial living.
Debbie's been riding a horse all. Oh, we'll let you ride a horse or herd the cattle.
I waved all the horses as I came in, but they didn't pay any attention to me.
Oh, well, they will.
You speak gently to them. How many do you have?
Oh, John, we don't ask questions like that in the country.
Excuse me. I can't say anything about cows and chickens right either.
But I can just carve you up for going to Carl Gables. And why do you have to go to Ocala tonight? Call him up, John, you can't come.
I've had bad enough time getting a date with this fellow. I could have gone the other way. I'm going to be in Orlando tomorrow night with a friend there, and I could have done it the other way around had I known in time that Bob was going to have this bad time canceling everything to make do today. If he told me that it would be much more convenient to see me tomorrow night, I could have arranged it the other way, but he didn't say anything until it was all fixed, my routine. So.
John, I wish you'd managed to just stop over for a little while. I'd love to give it a We just isolated down here, you see. Down here, there's one end of the county, and we never see anybody.
This is our favorite person.
Yeah.
And he runs down to the south end of Florida, never stops off here.
Yeah.
And when he did that one time, we weren't around. And here he's just...
Well, we're not on the...
Well, I didn't really have any intention of stopping. I didn't know what to do about Mary. I wrote her a little note after Kenneth wrote me about Edwin's death. And I thought, well, should I stop again, or should I...
Well, she's not there.
No,
she's
she?
In New York.
Oh, she's in New York.
I don't think she's come in. She's still...
Right.
She was in Europe, and so she's in
New
York.
Oh, she has been to Europe already.
Yeah.
Oh,
she went right on. I saw Ted Fernie in town yesterday, and I think she's back in New York, but she's not back
not here. Well,
so
they didn't know whether, nobody seemed to know whether she had gone to Europe. They knew that she was going.
Yeah,
but
she went. Her friends, you know, everybody said that's the thing to do. It's in your plans. Go ahead. So she said.
Well,
no, you don't want
to make quite a change in her ways and doings, I expect. Kenneth is very much concerned as to whether she's making any money out of the pantyhose or not, or whether Edwin just let her do it. I don't think Edwin would let her do it if she wasn't making something out of it. So.
Edwin would say he might not have a shirt on his back, but he'd have plenty of pantyhose.
Kenneth's still very much concerned about financial matters. And he wasn't
He
wasn't sure that Mary was making any money out of it.
Yeah.
I can't tell you. And surmise that she's been at it, 4 years now, something of the sort, and it's been a long time. So,
yeah.
But I don't think Edmund would let her go on.
At least she's got plenty of trips to Vienna.
Yes, that's what somebody was saying. She goes there 4 times a year.
Well, John, the other...
Yes, a lot of things you know I don't know. I'd like to know about because it's that. Roscoe has always had money, and he never talks about money.
Well, I don't...
But he always has it.
And I don't think they're doing too well, actually.
Oh? You know, he wrote us that he had a windfall, and that's why they went to Europe, to London last summer. An unexpected windfall, Wobbly, was the way he put it.
Well, Kenneth wasn't up on that, or else he didn't tell me that he was with them this summer.
Yeah.
For, I don't know how long. He wrote me from Daytona Beach that he thought he was going over to see the Parkers if they were willing. And they seem to have been in the mood, so I don't know how long he was over there. But usually he picks up all the local international gossip and passes it on. When
John, does Roscoe have investments?
I wouldn't think so, Guy. Their style of living is very simple.
Yes, I know.
But of course, they're both at the age when you begin to wonder whether you're going to make things last, too. I think old people generally get this way. So that I had a great aunt, for example, that my mother and my aunt thought they were going to have to support. She was scrimping, so, well, she died leaving $150,000, which we didn't know about.
She
just was afraid it wasn't going to last. Well, she wasn't that. During the rest of her life, she was very generous, actually. And this is what made my mother and my aunt think that she was in really bad circumstances. But yeah, I think it was just the fact that you are concerned that you've got enough to bury you when you finally decide that it's necessary. So. I don't know, God, but that would be my guess.
I don't know anything about anybody. You know, I hear them talk a little bit, but it never seems to be solid information.
We have threatened to kidnap Roscoe and Catherine and bring them up here.
Find out a few things.
When they come up here, they stay at the Holiday Inn, and all of their devoted friends pay homage to them there. You know, and they will not move around.
I don't think you'd ever get them to come.
Because they have, you know. One of our gayest times is right around this kitchen on the coldest night in the year.
Yeah.
But,
well, she's got to the point where she can't eat this, that, and the other thing. This was one of the problems, both at lunch and dinner. But this doesn't slow her down in their conversation at all.
Well,
isn't that great?
As long as they talk, that's all.
And
right.
The chimes ring at 5:00.
Oh, yeah.
No matter what.
Everything's done on schedule. Well, I see the time is getting on to 6:00. I hear
John,
your chicken will be burning up.
No.
Oh, chicken.
it is no, it just makes me so mad. I'm not going to speak to you. I'm just not going to say a word to you. Just call that man and tell him you just can't make it. Honest.
Very nice.
Run into a strange situation.
Well, there's all sorts of things we could tell you.
I don't think of anything to tell John.
Debbie could even tell you a few things.
He could tell us.
Maybe I can stop on my way back. That'll be the middle of March, something like that.
Oh, it don't matter when it is.
Don't plan to just stop. Just plan some time.
I haven't got my sleeping bag with me. I told my friend.
Debbie's got an extra sleeping bag, and you can sleep out in the back pasture.
Yeah. I have to learn to speak gently to the horses first.
Oh, no, the cows are in the back.
Oh, the cows. I'm not sure I'd do any better.
Yell at them.
No.
Yeah. They won't bother. They just visit.
Debbie will teach you how to drive a tractor.
Fanny was telling me about your program. And I said, very much like, or very much the same sort of thing that we had last spring. We have two faculty, one in the English department and one in the geology department. They have farms right next to one another, up in just across the border in Wisconsin.
Oh.
And they devised this farm term there.
Oh.
Took 16 students up for the whole spring term.
Yeah.
And they started right in the beginning of learning how to gather the eggs and what to do with the chickens and the cows and the horses. The farmed some of these people out to the farmers around, having contacted them and what they would like and so forth. And they went through a good many processes of clipping wool and carding and weaving it. And they had two courses, formal courses. I think Doug gave one in English and Dewey gave one in geology. Now, whether these were managed at night or what, I don't know. And then they got a course credit for ecology, I suppose it was. I don't know what it was. So they got three course credits for this, just as they would have had they been on campus. Well, the administration was very skeptical about the whole business to start with, but these were two good men, and the wives went along so that the students could live right in the homes there.
Yeah.
And so the deans went up to evaluate the program after it was all. They had a final day in which all the things that they had done were displayed and so forth. And they had all the local farmers in. And the assistant dean is a very good friend of mine. And Dante, he was just overwhelmed with these farmers. They had just had a marvelous time. Of course, they had all these kids helping them do things that, which normally they would have had to do themselves. And instead of getting in their hair, apparently they enjoyed the youthful contact very much, to the surprise of everybody concerned.
Yeah. Long hair, short hair.
Yeah, all this. This was one of the things that I think both Doug and Dewey were afraid that might happen, that some of the long hairs would turn the farmers off, and there would be antagonism from the very beginning. But they seem to have managed that very nicely from all the reports that came through. And the student had a marvelous time. They just didn't know what
well,
it was like.
John, it's a little hard to do anything here. It's they've got this compulsion about graduate school, you see. And they've just got to have the best graduate school in the world. And you see, that goes against everything else. I mean, you know how that warps, distorts, or influences everything else.
We have successfully resisted getting any kind of graduate school program with us. So.
Well, it's you know how it goes. It even goes down to the freshman. You can't
just start as far down as possible.
Oh yeah. And I don't know. Anything I've done has been almost it's just not the same thing down here as it is in the Mid-South or up even where you are, you see. I'm certain I could do things up there, up in the, you know, where we first were. Almost anything, I have a feeling. But here it's very difficult. It's extremely difficult to do anything. The universal machinery is so inflexible. You can take courses, you can get all sorts of courses, but you can't get out of the damn thing.
Part of college and university life, I guess. There was much conversation yesterday at the lunch table. I was with six of the English professors there, and they just had a very upsetting meeting in which I think they had voted to drop the language requirements throughout the university, and the liberal arts college was very much upset. They want some kind, even two languages, some of them were arguing for yesterday noon. So they were sort of arranging a cabal of some sort to put some pressure on the people that had been responsible for voting the language out. But yeah, they didn't think there was very much they could do about it. This was the way it was. So I don't know.
Well, you know, it's sort of ironical. I've always wanted to be in a school that's the size of sort of management. And the last place I wanted to be was in the university. And I couldn't find a little ordinary school that would take me, you see.
Now, you came right here from Moorhead, didn't you?
Yes. And I didn't want to come here. I just...
It's all Faye's fault, no doubt. She wanted the sunny sound.
No, it just
fell out that way.
It just fell out that way. And what's more, there's no music in Florida, and so it wasn't my choice.
I see.
No.
Well,
and I didn't want to live in Florida. I didn't want all that old sunshine.
I tell you, John, it's been nice though.
No, I didn't come to for the sunshine.
I mean, the weather has.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to. Well, that's about the way I was when I went to Knox. I thought, I don't want to teach in a small college, and I don't want to teach in the Middle West, but I'll try it for a year.
Yeah.
There I was, 27 years.
Yeah.
But I was very happy at Knox. I had no regrets of any kind.
It's the right size, too.
And we've had good students. We've been really worthwhile working with.
Yeah.
You didn't feel that you were just putting in time, as I sometimes did, I think, at Tennessee.
Oh, yeah.
Ken says they still do.
Well, there's one thing about it, yeah. There's no easy way.
It's all hard work, isn't it?
It's all... I don't know whether you call it hard work or just it's traumatic. I don't know of a simple word. It's but
more than upsetting. Huh?
People just get hit over the head all the time. I mean, it's unavoidable. You even go talk to people, you know, you feel like you've been chewed up. Yes,
We've got, and the students always surprise me because we've got that big Cuban and Miami element.
Oh.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But anyway, it's been a strange one.
Yes, just can't tell what the hell.
John,
is. How am I going to find
you
my
just
way
like
out
it.
Now?
You can't.
I'll go out with you.
John, you just like you always were. You just make schedules. I hope that you'd quit that foolishness.
Well, I'm a highly organized person.
Oh, you are not. I'm no better than that. Aren't you going to see us in March?
Well, I'll...
And we won't... I'll tell you what, we won't even make you stay out here if you want to live in the city.
Maybe I'll be
more
sick and tired of the city by that time.
See, Debbie's been all over... She's been all over living in France for a year, perhaps.
Oh,
and she's come
really?
Back over here to... come out here to really learn what things are like.
We have a junior year in a France program, school of Besançon. Which take 12, 15 of our students. It's a Midwest, Associated College Midwest project, but most of the students are from now.
Well, if you could just linger another 20 minutes, we'd have you say it.
I know.
I know you're not going to even have anything to eat where you go.
Oh, I'm going to try. See what happens. I'll give you a note.
We don't even have to do that. We're always here, John.
I'm
Garfield, and we had a big cocktail party, and three or four people got drunk. They had too much, and he was serious. You know, you just don't do that. You know, you drink like a gentleman. Just he made his beautiful cocktails, and they drank so many they got. He made them too well.
Well, we all said, you know.
I didn't know who it was, that's why I thought maybe it was somebody. And then when I was standing here and I realized that it was just a friend of yours that it was. I thought maybe it was someone from the country.
Yeah. Well,
so I was going to leave again.
No, I want you
to talk to him.
No, I want you to come in. No, it's just because I want you to meet him. I was just so fascinated at the time. I didn't know. I thought maybe you wanted to tell me something.
No, I was just waiting for a break in the conversation.
When he drove up, his car looks exactly like Rick's. It's not. It's a bigger car. And then when he got out, see, I haven't seen him in 20 years. I haven't. We correspond, but I haven't seen him. And when he got out, you know, he had this brown sort of thing on. I said, well, what's Rick doing out here tonight? And then he got out, and I realized it wasn't Rick. And I had to look at him real hard. Just a darling. He and Guy and there's three or four of us started teaching together. And we just had such a good time at the University of Tennessee. Everybody comes to Florida, you know, and really, just that's where almost we had to have an not because of us, but because just people who come down from, you know, to Florida that we've known, we hardly ever saw.
Mm-hmm.
We'd say, well, that's a halfway mark to Miami, we'll stay with the Mileses when we first came down. And there was times when we just wish we had an unlisted telephone, you know, because the people we didn't even know very well. And what they, you know, that's when they first came down. Gosh, I love John.
Oh, I certainly did. It felt good.
Good, good, good.
And
we have Phoebe.
And here I had Phoebe, and I
but
also knew a little bit more.
Capacity.
But it's exactly the same thing. I mean, I had the same feelings of sort of the magnitude of something that man has created when I saw the Acropolis, even though I didn't know as much about the art. I still had the same feeling.
Well, and then we just saw it, embracing it.
I see. How did you happen to get into this?
I tell you.
With the idea of color, that's what got me into it. The idea.
What were people doing to you?
People were, this morning, were looking at me like there was something wrong with me, like I had bogged down, like everybody kept saying,
yeah.
You run out, you run dry, what's wrong with you? And I started to think maybe there was something wrong with me. I mean, everybody said it. And I thought, well, I better tap myself a little bit and see what this is all about. I mean, maybe there's something wrong. You know, I can't take it or something. And so then I started thinking about Phoebe and what Phoebe did when she ran dry painting. She said she would paint and paint and paint. And she just loved it, but she'd run dry. And then sometimes, especially if she stopped painting for a month or so, she had to do something else, and she couldn't paint for a month, and then she had to try to get back to painting, or she just didn't feel like painting, she didn't want to paint, but she knew that if she was painting again, she'd feel better. She said the thing that she did was to go to her paint box and open it up and just start mixing colors, and she'd just mix colors, just the brightest, brightest colors she could mix, and she just put them on paper. Maybe one day she'd just paint all red, and the next day maybe she'd just paint all blue, and the next day she'd paint orange. But she'd just do color. She wouldn't think about anything else. She'd just slap color on. She used that word, slap it on, and in watercolor that's what you do, because your brush is wet, and it's like painting a house almost. You just slap it on. Oil paint, you get stuck in it. It's sticky, but watercolor just flows. And she said, then after a while, I get interested in the way the colors go together. And the next thing you know, I'm interested in the design that I'm making. And the next thing you know, I'm putting lines in. And the next thing you know, I'm painting pictures again. And she said, it always works for me to start out abstract. It gets you going again, just to spread out colors and stick your face in it and rub your nose in it a little bit for a while. And it maybe it'll take a week of just painting nothing but red, but eventually it works again, because you just get interested in what the red's doing. And so I decided that that's what I'd do. That is, since everybody was looking at me like maybe I needed to do a little abstract art, that I'd better pour out my colors and wallow in them. So I got out my paint box, which was that when I was at Chartres, I couldn't seem to write about the cathedral itself, but every night I'd sit down and I'd just jot down little poems about it. And for me, poems are like painting abstractly. They're word pictures and they're abstract, and they work for me the way I think modern abstract art works for Phoebe. So I went and pulled out all the little poems that I'd written about Chartres while I was there, and I sat down with the first one.
That morning?
This morning.
Yeah.
And I just started to explain what the poem was about, what had happened. And the next thing you know, I was just writing about the whole experience of spending 4 days there in February when it was so cold. And we went to the cathedral every day, bundled up in 3 shirts and a sweater and tights and jeans and 2 pairs of socks. I wore too many socks and ruined my feet, because I had too many pairs of socks on with my shoes. But it was so cold that my feet would get numb walking around the cathedral. I could make it around once, and they had 2 space heaters in the transept. and people would stop and group over the space heaters. And when they had a service, everybody would sit down in the wings near the space heaters, and the priest would be up in the middle all by himself. And they had that microphone so he could yell out to the congregation who was sitting on the heaters down at the end. So we'd walk until our feet just got so numb we couldn't feel them anymore, and then you just go stand on the space heater for a while. It was in the floor grating, and it was warm. It was real warm, but it was only warm right where the heater was. You stepped 2 inches to one side, and it was cold again because it was so high that the heat just went zip up, and you had to stand over it to get any warmth at all. So really, all it warmed was your feet when you stood on the grating. But that got me started again with Chartres, with the first day that I was there, seeing the little French schoolboys. That was, for me, that was the whole souvenir of Chartres for the first day, was seeing these little schoolboys. We had gone in the morning. We'd been there all day. We'd gone out for lunch, and we'd come back again, and I was just overwhelmed by how beautiful it was. I had just spent the whole day just worshiping. It was so beautiful. And about 3 or 4 in the afternoon, the school children started coming through the transept, and the church was too long for them to go around. It took too much time, and it was cold. And maybe part of the reason that they came through was that they could stop on the space heaters. I don't know, maybe. But they all wore uniforms, and the little boys had on shorts and knee socks and those, oh, big bony knees. I don't know why little 9 and 10 year old boys are so skinny. They have knees like this, and then these little skinny legs on either side, and they look so cold. Oh, they just look so cold. And they, all laden down, they had these little thin shoulders, and they had big black satchels with books sort of hunched over like this. And then they all have long sort of hair that hasn't been cut in a while and sort of sticks up in different places, and all these cute little boys zipping through. And I didn't notice. I was standing in the nave back, and they were going across the transept, and I didn't notice when they were going, but they all stopped at the cross, and they either bowed or they genuflected, but they stopped, each one, as they went across. They were all Catholic. And the last two little boys in this one string that I was watching go through came running by. They were really going fast, probably because they were behind the rest of them. And one of them nodded his head at the cross and went on through, and the other one didn't. And I didn't notice it at the time, but he got to the end of the pews, and he remembered that he hadn't genuflected. And he whipped around, and he came back, and he really genuflected. He didn't just bow his head. He went down on his knee. He was sort of like he was atoning for the fact that he didn't do it the first time. He went all the way down and came up again and went zipping off to find his friend. And he was just so lovely. He was just like a little angel that just came running in and bowed at the cross and went running out again. And I really thought he was my own little angel in short. I keep him. He's just the day I saw an angel, and it's not at all, I mean, it's real to me. It's not at all corny. It's real.
Is that the little poem?
That's the little poem.
Yeah.
That's the, when I sat down that night, that was all I could think about, was that I'd seen this little boy bowing at the cross, and that it made the church real.
Yeah.
I was so overwhelmed by it the first day that there was so much there to see, and I was terribly excited by all I was going to learn about it, because I, at the end of the day, before the bookstore had closed, I'd gone in and I'd bought a guidebook to the windows and a guidebook to the sculpture and a book on how they made the windows, and I had these books all open on my bed in front of me. But all I could think about, there was so much knowledge there, you know, there was so much to learn, and all I could think about was that little boy bowing at the cross.
Yeah.
All I remembered from the day. And I still see him. He had a cowlick up the back of his head, and I just, that little piece of hair that stood up, you know, he couldn't have been more than 8 or 9, 10, really small. Cute child. So cute.
So that got you started.
That got me started. That got me going. And we saw a wedding. We got to be such good friends with the lady that ran the bookstore. She told us everything that was going to happen. Actually, she told us about the wedding, and then on Sunday, we left on Sunday, and I decided I wanted to go to a service. And so I went to talk to her about when there were services that I could go to. I didn't know if there was a service every day or not. They gave mass. And she said that on Sunday they had morning services, and she told me which ones would be the best to go to, which ones would have music and which ones wouldn't, and which one I should try to see on Sunday. And then she said, there's going to be a wedding tomorrow. You ought to be sure to come to it. And I thought, oh. I said, I can't go. I'm not invited. And she said, oh, but it doesn't matter. It's here in the cathedral, and it's public. Everybody comes.
The whole town.
The whole town comes because it's public. If you get married in the cathedral, anybody can come. She said, they'll probably be glad you come because then they can fill up the pews. They'll look like there are more people there. She said, you come tomorrow because they're going to have a boys choir, and there'll be really lovely music, and you should come and hear it. And so I told Phoebe about it. We planned to come. We planned our whole day about coming. Oh, and she said that the people that were getting married, there was the daughter of the richest man in Chartres and the richest farmer in La Beauce were the two people getting married. Then it was just a fairy tale, she said. It was just a fairy tale. And you could tell the whole town had been talking about it, that here was Cinderella and, well, not Cinderella, but because Cinderella ended up in the ash heap, but the richest girl in town and the richest farmer, and it was a fairy tale out of whatever the French equivalent of Brothers Grimm would be. And she said, to be sure to come. So we went, and walking up to the church, the bells were ringing and in the spires, and it was just, I hadn't heard the bells ring before, and they were ringing them, I suppose, to tell people that it was time to come to the wedding. I don't know why they didn't ring them for a service, but they didn't. And it was like the church was talking. I had this very strong sensation that the church was actually speaking to me. It was sort of, I had a very many sort of mystical moments with that church because it just really lived for me. It just lived and breathed. And we got inside, and the organ was playing, and there was so much music. It just got up in the ceiling and stayed there and just rang. It was just, I don't know who or how or why they were able to build a structure in the 12th and 13th century that could hold sound like that, but I've never heard anything anywhere that could compare to the way music sounds in a cathedral. It's just, they somehow, in some uncanny way, they knew what to do with to make the structure house the music. And it was so loud. I don't think it was intentional. It was just the way it echoed up in the ceiling. And I had the feeling that all the sound was up there, and down underneath it were just this little white bride all in a white dress and this little groom in a little black coat. They were sitting down on these two chairs down there, and it was just like somebody had planned this wedding for me and was giving it to me like a little present. It was so pretty. It was just my own little wedding at Chartres, and I felt very personal about it, like it was my wedding, and you know, nobody was supposed to meddle with it because it was just done for me, and everybody else in the building was just sort of peripheral to the fact that I was there at this little wedding, and they just seemed, they really seemed like little dolls, little figurines to me because they were so far away. I had to sit back in the nave, and they were down at the cross of the nave and the transept, but that has a technical name. And they were tiny, but then again, I had this mental possession of them. And then they had the reception for the wedding at our hotel.
Where were you sitting?
I was sitting back in the nave with the town. I just went in and sat down, and there were a lot of people who had come to hear the music.
On the same floor level?
Yeah.
Yes, there are no upper stories. Everybody's on the same level. And I think a lot of people came to hear the music because they had a boys' choir. Just beautiful. Oh, these little soprano voices. just so beautiful. And then after the wedding, they had the reception at our hotel, and I just thought, well, that was perfect. They were picking up my wedding and taking it to my hotel, and I could just follow them right along. It just sort of completed the personal feeling that I had about that wedding. I just thought, well, the church had done everything for me, you know, and everything. I even saw a wedding there. And
but you couldn't take part in the reception.
No. No, we thought that we'd better just slip around and go up to our room because we looked a little scruffy, and we thought maybe all these people in there, Christian Dior gowns, would wonder when we walked in wearing our blue jeans and our matching coats and six sweaters bulging out. I used to wear so much to go into the cathedral that I had to walk with my arms stiff because I couldn't bend.
Oh, Debbie.
It was so cold in there. Oh, it was so cold. I mean, it never snowed, but it looked like it was going to snow all the time. The sky was that sort of lead color that it gets when it's going to snow. And it rained a little bit, which is, in a way, that's worse, because if it snows, at least it's sort of a crisp cold, and you don't suffer quite as much. But if it's cold enough to snow and it rains instead, it just kind of rubs you raw and gets in there and drips a little water down the back of your coat. And you just stay cold. Poor Phoebe was the one that really suffered, because she couldn't paint. She wasn't painting, she was sketching, because she couldn't set up her easel in the church. She'd had to have done that outside, and it really was too cold to do that outside. And in the church, it was too dark for her to do too much sketching. But she sketches on little sheets of paper that are like a large index card, but not the 5x7, but the next size. On blue, and she sketches with white ink on these blue sheets of paper. I never asked her why she used blue. Perhaps it's easier on your eyes when you.
And she does that to use it later.
Yes, and she can paint from the sketches she makes. And so she did. She did a lot of sketches of the architecture of the pillars and the the vaulting. The way the pillars went together. I couldn't. It seems to me that there's so much at Chartres that you should go ready to do one, either to do the sculpture or to do the windows. That there's so much that it's hard to do both. And I just got hung up on the windows right away, and I stayed there with them the whole time I was there, and it was hard for me to get. To break into the sculpture or into the architecture. I don't have as much a feeling for those enormous pillars and the fact that one side of the cathedral is higher than the other, that you have to walk up three steps on the left-hand side and only two on the right-hand side when you face the altar. I don't have that. That's not what the maze in the middle of the floor. Phoebe told me about that. She said she was walking down the center aisle, and all of a sudden her foot hit something on the floor, and then she remembered that there's the big maze in the middle of the floor. It's all covered up now with pews, but it's still there, and you bump into the metal sort of half circle set into the stone. Are they metal? I think they're metal. And it's a huge maze, a circular maze, and it's supposedly is one of the few that's still whole in any cathedral anywhere. It's this one in Chartres. But you can't follow it because of the pews. But Phoebe looked at the architecture, and I looked at the windows. The first time I walked down the nave, I picked out my favorite window, and I think I probably would have just been satisfied if they'd have let me take that window along with me. I just, and every guidebook I looked in, I looked for a picture of it, and I never found one. Although they said in one guidebook that it was one of the best artistically designed, from the point of view of design, it was one of the best windows in the cathedral, because it's an early window, it's the Mary Magdalene window, and the overall design, when you look at it from the other side of the cathedral, is three large circles, and you just see the circles. It's very simple, whereas some of the later windows, when they got a little more complicated in what they were trying to do, have the same kind of circular design, but then within the circle there are all kinds of little scrolly, very complicated divisions for the different scenes. But the Mary Magdalene window is just three large circles divided in quarters, and that's all. It's very simple, and I think that's why I liked it so much. That, and that the blue in it is lovely. It's slightly different than the two windows on either side of it, and they were all done at the same time. But the blue in the Mary Magdalene window is a little different, and I saw that window before I'd even seen the rose windows, and I just wanted to take it with me. The rose windows were nothing.
What did Mary Magdalene do in the window?
They were very confused about Mary Magdalene in the 12th century. They weren't sure. They thought she was, the upper portion of the window is the story of Lazarus, because they thought that Mary Magdalene was, there were two Mary Magdalenes. There was the Mary Magdalene who was Lazarus's sister, and the Mary Magdalene who washed Christ's feet. And the bottom portion of the window is the Mary Magdalene, the Last Supper, and the Mary Magdalene is under the table washing Christ's feet with her hair, and you can see her doing it. It's just the life in those windows is utterly incredible. She's really there, and she really has her, she's holding her hair out from her head like that. And in the 13th century they did this, and then in the top part of the top half of the window is the story of Lazarus rising, coming up from the dead. And he's sitting up in his tomb, just big as life. He's right there. I'd have to use my guidebook to remember the chronology of the two legends. But there are two. There's the Mary Magdalene in the bottom and Lazarus in the top. And to one side, the window is the Good Samaritan, and the next one down is the life of the Virgin, and then I'm forgetting. I used to know them. I could go around. I can see them, but I can't remember. I'd have to get my guidebook to remember them now.
Well, you're not supposed to remember them. They've come to you. You were just wanting to. Just give them time. But now you didn't have to have the binoculars for that.
No, that was before we rented the binoculars. Phoebe knew about renting the binoculars, and she said to the woman in the bookstore, who became our friend, she ran the bookstore and gave the tours in French, and we followed the tour every day, and so she got to know us pretty well. And in fact, I told her that I was going to go to school in Nice. That I was going to learn French in Nice, and that I'd be back in the summertime. And she said, "Oh, well, I'll remember you. You're the girl in the red coat. I'll remember you. You come back and talk to me in the summertime." And I said, "Okay."
Oh, that same red coat you
wear. The same red coat that I wear around. Oh, not the one I wear. Not the hunting coat. Another one. I like red. And she said, "I'll remember you. You're the girl in the red coat who bought all the postcards." I just would find a postcard that I liked, and I wouldn't buy one, I'd buy five. I'm sure she thought I was the most opulent American she'd seen in a long time. I spent all my pennies on postcards at Chartres. And she said,
"Maybe we didn't get a single postcard." Not a one. Not a postcard.
She
couldn't send him a note, hand mail letter.
Oh, you mean from Debbie?
Oh.
You didn't get a single postcard from her.
You can't. I couldn't send them in an airmail letter to you. No, they won't let you send enclosures in that. They send them back to you. Tricky. Phoebe asked this woman where we could get some binoculars, and it was there any place around the cathedral that rented them? And she said, no, but go to my husband, who is the tower guard. He guards the tower.
Well, that's her husband.
That's her husband, yes. It was all in the family now. The whole family worked there. She said, go to him, and he's got some binoculars that you can rent. So we went down, and he's sitting there, this huge, fat stomach. He was wearing a blue sweater and a blue beret, and he had a big arched French nose that stood out about 2 inches from his face, and a stomach that stood out about 2 feet. And he was sitting behind a little black table, and on the table was a huge roll of orange tickets, like the kind of tickets that you used to get to go to a movie 10 years ago. And he'd rip off these tickets and give them to you, and then he'd open the door and sort of sigh, and you'd go up, and then he'd say, you know, well, be careful. You know, he'd never gone up to the roof, and he thought anybody who did go up to the roof was a little crazy. Oh! I took Russell back in the summertime, and I said, Russell, we have to go up on the roof. It's a beautiful view. Well, Russell's got vertigo. I didn't know, and she didn't tell me. She wanted to go up on the roof and take pictures, so we got up there. Got all the way up there.
Oh, Debbie.
We were walking along, and she seemed fine, and then we went up in the tower, up as high as we could go, and I just was merrily going along my way, and all of a sudden I realized that Russell wasn't with me, and I thought, where is she? And I turned around and I went back. She was up in front of it.
Oh, Debbie.
And then she was really scared, and so I said, I think we better go down now.
She was
really frightened that she was going to fall.
Yes. I mean, it was worse. I had that hit me one time. Oh, I had it hit me more than that. I was diving off the Roney Plaza, one of those big diving boards in one of those pools down there. We were simulating abandoning a ship in the Army. And I got to the end of the dive board, I couldn't get off. Man right behind me, isn't he? He could have just pushed me. Put him down in the arm, but he didn't. I had to back up a few times before I could get home.
It'll hit you, I know.
It hit it really hard.
But he had
the binoculars, and we asked him if he had any binoculars to rent, and he said, oh yes, he did. Come to my office. The office in a cathedral. He has an office, because I thought maybe we had to go outside. I hadn't seen anything, but it was so big that he had an office in the choir screen. Right in the choir screen, he just walked around to the far side, to the south side, and there was a little door in the choir screen, and he opened it, and there was a little room right in the choir screen,
yes,
with a desk and a typewriter and a file cabinet and everything. It was small, but it was a room. It had a gooseneck lamp just like that. And he said, now, here are the binoculars. He got out two sets of binoculars that were really the mangiest sets of binoculars I'd ever seen. They worked fine, but the paint was half off.
But they
worked. Oh, they worked just fine. They just looked like, rental binoculars, like people had sort of been swinging them around and knocking off the paint every couple times, and the strap was sort of chewed on. Looked like maybe a pet poodle had had it. And he said, said, there's no rental charge for these, but I'll need $20 of your passport.
No rental fee.
No rental fee, but I need $20. That's in case you don't bring them back. We can buy some more. And so we said, well, we understood that, and we'd rather give him the $20 than we would like to give him our passports. And so he said that was fine, and we gave him the money. And he said, now you can keep them as long as you want. And we said, well, we'll be here for 3 more days, and we'd like to keep them for 3 days. And he said, well, that's fine. You don't have to give them back at night, but just, you know, give them back when you're finished. I'll be over there at the tower, and if I'm not there, you come back to my office. And the sill under the door was all worn down. The stone was all worn down. And he said, now, you look down there, and if you see a light there, I'm in my office. And if you don't see a light, I'm overselling tickets. So we kept the binoculars for 3 days and used them. Used them all the time. That's when you really could see all the little scenes. That's when I really, for the next 3 days, I could really learn the windows. I had my guidebook in one hand and my binoculars in the other, and just walked like that the whole day.
And the windows all the way around. Now, it's not just the big windows.
All the windows are the stained glass. Uh-huh. All the windows are the original stained glass. Just that the oldest windows are the windows on the front portal. They're 12th century, and they're a different blue than the others. They made the glass in a way that they couldn't reproduce in the 13th century. So the color is different. And you don't notice it quite so much when you're standing looking at a window on the side of the nave and the windows in the portal. You don't quite notice the difference in the blue, but there's one window that the window of the Virgin, and part the upper half of it is 12th century. It's the Virgin and Child, and that is the 12th century blue. And then they managed to save that when the cathedral burned in the 12th century, and they redid the window around it in the 13th century, so that you have the 12th and 13th century blues next to each other, and you can there very distinctly see the difference that. The 12th century blue is is slightly lighter, and Phoebe used to say it's a clearer blue, but that you get bogged a little in colors. I got used to hearing her talk about colors, so that in artistic terms, and I could see what she was talking about when she'd say that it was a clear blue or a bright blue. Or dull blue, just by the adjectives. But
I'm thinking once you've got used to hearing someone like Phoebe talk about colors, it bring it to life so much, you'd be sort of dull just going around people, all the colors look alike to them. I've never had any experience at all with that. You know.
It's
not at all.
She was very interested in the windows, and the fact that she said that in theory they shouldn't work together, because you're taking a blue that's too bright and a red that's too bright and a green that's too bright and violet and yellow and all crazy colors, and you're throwing them together, and it shouldn't work. She said it does work. They are beautiful, and the reason that it works is that this was her theory that she worked out while we were there. It's because of the leading between the glass was black and separated the colors, and that your eye, you didn't realize that you were seeing the black separating the colors. Your eye compensated for that when you looked at it, but it was enough to make you see each color separately, and they didn't compete with each other. They were separated, and she said that black and white can do the same thing, and often they used white in the borders of the windows or between the scenes, and that worked in the same way to separate the colors or to separate the scenes. She said that their art theory was really terribly sophisticated, although the drawings and the paintings on the and were not, they were more primitive, but they had so much action, they were able to express so much action what they did. And they knew so much. Oh, they knew so much. If you could know all the biblical scholarship, if you will, that goes into those windows or that goes into the sculpture, and then know all the 13th and 12th century scholarship that went into it, beyond just the story of Mary Magdalene and Lazarus, and then know that in the 12th century that they thought there were two Mary Magdalenes, and one was the sister of Lazarus, and one washed the feet of Christ. There's just so much to know there. It's overwhelming. It's overwhelming, and I wanted to learn everything about it. I'd go back at night and I'd open my guidebooks and I'd read, and all I had was a little pocket dictionary, one of those little tiny French dictionaries, because I wasn't going to carry around I didn't have my other dictionary then anyway, my good dictionary that I got in Nice. And so I'd translate every night, and there were so many words that weren't in my little dictionary that I just had to sort of piece them together, all the biblical words or the technical words about the windows or making the glass or making the lead that I missed out a little bit on. I should read my guidebooks again.
You know, I've never seen Frenchmen like those. I didn't realize it. They wear those heavy, loose knitted sweaters. And then if they had a big stomach, it would just make it that much bigger, wouldn't it?
Yep. It sure does. And they just have paunches. I mean, they're not really fat otherwise. I mean, the man who the tower guard had a full face, but it wasn't fat. It was red. It was bright red, and his nose was red too. Bright red nose. But it was just his stomach starting right about here and just sort of went out like this. Out about, oh, good, at least a foot out from his spine.
I know, I can believe it.
Huge, yeah. Stomach, just huge.
I've seen you over there.
Huge. Yeah. Probably solid, too. I mean, he didn't, you know, he didn't look like he was fat, really. He just had a big stomach.
Yeah. They sat after, at their meals, a good while.
Mm-hmm. sort of rest back like this. So, and he had to sit, his stomach was so big he had to get back from the table a little bit to make room for it.
Well, now, I'm going to tell you this. as you go over that at your typewriter, it ought to be restful. But it still takes all your faculties, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Now you see, you worked all last week, and you worked in the daytime, and then you worked at night too. You see, we had fine, you know, reporting and all. So by Friday night, you'd had a time of it.
Is both of us said it was just too. It was just more than anybody had done.
Yes,
it was. You know, you weren't. This is all we were talking about. You just needed to break. So you could continue with it.
Yeah.
Take a breather. Uh-huh. Get some cobwebs out.
Yeah.
And,
no, I see that. Uh-huh. I see it.
But you still, you know, when you're interested, you keep putting it off, and you go too long. I do. I still do. You see, and just get. Let's see.
It was almost as if, you know, we all were just had been waiting for so long for you to do this. You know, we felt, and we wanted to hear, and we were so fascinated with what you were talking about that we just wanted to gobble it up. You know.
Now, what was that little trip you took around the church?
Yes.
Well, I've forgotten the
when you got there.
The occasion for that.
You got there at night.
When I first got there at night. Yeah. We drove from Avranches, which is way over in Normandy. It took us about 6 or 7 hours to get there, and we arrived about 8 o'clock at night. And Phoebe said, "Do you want to see the cathedral tonight?" And I said, "Well, sure," because I wasn't expecting anything at all.
You'd already had the big one.
I'd seen Notre Dame in Paris, and I thought, well, that's it. You know, I've seen a cathedral. And Phoebe had said, well, we're going to go to Chartres and we're going to spend 4 days. And I thought, well, fine. You know, Phoebe's going to paint, and that's fine. And, you know, I can look at the cathedral. And it's probably interesting. And I didn't know anything at all about it, anything. And we drove up. It was not hard to find.
Does that half a page in your...
We drove up and got out, and I looked up, and I saw the two different spires. And the first thing I thought was, Chartres is the one that has two different spires. And I had two pictures and half a page on it in Janssen's History of Art. And that was a lot, to have two pictures and a half a page.
When you were a sophomore?
When I was a sophomore. I took a survey course in art history. And that was the first thing that hit me. And then we looked at the south portal at the statues, where, just as we got out of the car. And then Phoebe said, "Now come on, this isn't the best one. The best one's around front. You come on and follow me." And so we walked, and it was so big. It was just huge. And we walked around to the front, and it was better. It was the best. It was the oldest portal, the original facade of the original church that burned in the 12th century. And the primitive faces and the primitive stiff sculptures that had no movement and no names either. They don't know who a lot of them are anymore. And then Phoebe said, "Well, there's more around the other side. And I said, "Oh, there can't be any more. It was so big. It was just enormous." And she said, "Well, there's another portal." And I started running because it was so big. I thought, I've got to take this in somehow. And I just started running around the edge of the church. It was only 8 o'clock at night, but there was no one there. And I ran all the way around the side and up to the north portal. And Phoebe was right behind me running. We just went tearing around the side of this cathedral. And there we were, stopped in front of the north portal. And that was Phoebe's favorite door. And she said, "Now there's Abraham and Isaac," and she pointed them out, and Abraham was standing there with little Isaac next to him. It's a double, the statues are a little like columns around the door, but this one's a double column because there's Isaac, little Isaac, and Abraham has his head on his hand on his head like that, and then Abraham is looking up, waiting for the word from God to sacrifice his son. It was just so big.
And everywhere you look is something to look at.
Everywhere.
That's discouraging, isn't it?
Oh, it's too much. you need a week. 8 hours a day. We only had 4 days. But I would say that at 8 hours a day for 4 days, that's 32 hours of short.
And you didn't get stove up?
I didn't want to go. I couldn't bear the thought that I was going to leave and it would be June before I could get back at least. I just couldn't bear it.
You got back in June?
I went back with Russell in June. I told her she had to go to Chartres.
But you didn't have 4 days.
No, we went for the day. We went at 8 o'clock in the morning and came back at about 6 o'clock that night. We stayed the day. But we didn't try to stay overnight.
It wasn't so cold.
And it wasn't cold, and there was sun, and we could stay outside more then. I looked more at the sculpture outside when we went back in June, although you could see the windows from the inside, and they were awfully lovely. Oh, so pretty. That time, in the summer, I could see, they talked about one of the tours that we took. The guide said that the windows have moods at different times of the day, depending on the light, that they can be sober if there's not much light, or they can be really glorious and happy feeling if the light is strong on them. And the windows in the front portal are best in the setting sun, late in the day when the sun is low and comes through the windows.
You know, I used to think a lot about the people that live in those places, you know, the little establishments around the cathedrals. And they just live there. Some of them, you see, that's all they ever saw.
Mm-hmm. It's like those little boys running through. They live with it all the time. They walk through the church going to work. Going home from work, going to market, just walk through.
But
it's a thoroughfare.
See, they would even, you see, they'd meditate just deliberately. And all those things come to life. Well, now that's all right. Except it cuts you off, you see. No one will do it now. Be possible to have it. But we have their experience. I mean, you look at their experience, don't you? And that's it. That's something. You don't want to be tied to an institution.
Mm-hmm.
No matter whether it's pretty or ugly or what.
People now. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't want to.
Yeah. Yeah.
It cuts you off. And it dwarfs the people, you see. Now, it dwarfed all those people. You didn't see much of any of them. She subordinated them. Oh, you see, if he was there with cold hands, you see, with her little green pads, well, that's not very much.
It could be.
And all that business about Lazarus and like that, see, Lazarus as if he was, you see, Ishmael's picture of Jonah has more life in it than the one there.
I'll do it again.
And there's the experience, you see, is above the institution.
That doesn't take away from your charge.
It makes you look at it.
Makes you look at it, yes, in the
mm-hmm.
light of the institution. That's what it is.
Now, this is Debbie on Charts on Tuesday after supper, the 5th of December, 72, Channel 1 over, towards the end of Channel 1 over, around 1700, Channel 1 over, and the end of the visit with Debbie on Charts after supper, Tuesday after supper, the 5th of December, 72, over, around, 1700. This Tuesday, the 5th of December, 72.